Good morning, everyone. It's good to be with you this morning, once again. I just passed out three little containers, and inside each container there's some quarters. And so if you would, please take four quarters out of that bin and then pass it on to the next person. I need everyone to have four quarters. So if you can do that as quickly as possible and pass those around, I'd appreciate that. A couple things to mention before we get into our lesson, so I'll do that as that's getting passed around. First of all, thank you for your participation in the Food Blitz thus far this month, and I encourage you to continue to do that, and for this week especially, but just as a general rule, one thing to know about the Friendship Inn is that all of the food we give to them, they are going to prepare and serve. And so they're not actually just handing out food, they're actually making it. And so when it comes to something like soup, which is our item for this week, one big can of soup is better than 12 little cans of soup. And just to make you understand why, imagine having to open every can of soup, and you're feeding 300 people. If we got the little cans of soup, that's going to be pretty hard on the wrists. So if you can, get the bigger can instead of several small cans. But of course, anything you can get and bring, we appreciate you bringing along. Ian and his crew headed out this week. They snuck out a day earlier than expected to avoid the potential strike, but they are on their way. And some of you may have been getting updates via Facebook, or Ray sent out some emails and stuff. And I kind of knew this was going to happen somewhere along the way, but it actually happened sooner than I thought, and Ian got himself in a bit of trouble. And so But fortunately, apparently, they let him out, and things are going very well. If you read your email early this morning, Ray sent out another note talking about their Sunday morning that they had already experienced our last night. And so they all arrived safely, and things are going well. They're in Delhi right now, and on Tuesday, I believe, they're going to head down to Madras and spend most of this next week down in Madras. If you are reading along in the book that goes with this series, if you have the book, this week's reading is chapter 5, Lust and the Pure of Heart, and that will match up with what we're going to talk about next week. So if you're reading in the book, please read chapter 5 for next week. We're in the middle of a series called Battlefront, and it's been a couple weeks since we've actually talked on this subject, so I wanted to just do a quick review as we got into things. The premise of this series is that there is a battle going on, there is a war going on around us, and we cannot escape this battle. We are in the middle of it, and we are in the heart of it, and we just really can't avoid it or get away from it. The battle is your heart and mind is where the battle is being fought, and your heart and mind is what the battle is being fought over. And so you are right in the middle of this, and you can't escape it. And both sides are kind of lobbying for your allegiance, and they're doing so with the same message. And the message that both sides are kind of sending to you is that life on this side is good, and it's full, and it's abundant, and it's as good as it gets, and it's the way that it was meant to be. And if you go to the other side, you are going to be missing out on what you really want to have. And both sides are kind of sending us that same message. And so we've been looking at several different battle lines, if you will, where this battle is going on, and how both sides kind of launch their attack and lobby for our allegiance in that. And so this morning we're going to look at another one of those battle lines, and that is why we need the quarters. Have the quarters made their way all the way around to the back? When they get, Jason, you got them all at the back there? Great. Okay, here's what I need you to do. Hold both your hands open like that. Very good. You should have four quarters floating mysteriously between your two hands. And so what we're going to do, I tried to make this as simple as possible. So your right hand is going to be your receiving hand, and your left hand is going to be your letting go hand. And since you just received four quarters, put your four quarters into your right hand. All right? Now, I just need to clarify. Those four quarters are yours. A gift for you. They're yours. No strings attached. Nothing. I don't expect them back. They are yours. All right. Now, having said that, if I said in a minute we're going to take up a collection for some really noble and worthy cause, maybe famine relief or natural disaster relief, or maybe education for kids in third world countries or something of that nature, with your hands open, if I said that right now, how many of your four quarters of your $1 would go into your left hand, your let-go hand, to go into that special collection that we are going to take in a minute? Okay? Go ahead. Actually do it. All right. Now you need to use your imagination a little bit. What if instead of $1, I gave you $10? And so those quarters represent a $2.50 bill. So, imagine that that $1 is actually $10. And I say the same thing. We're going to take up a collection for some noble and worthy cause. How many of those $2.50 coins would stay in your left hand? And how many would slip back into your right? Go ahead and do it. Don't watch your neighbor. Just go ahead and do it. Now, what if instead of $10, I gave you $1,000? And so now those are $250 coins each in your hand. If that was $1,000 in your hand, how many of the coins would be in the let it go, put it into the basket hand, and how many would be in the I'm going to hang on to this and get something I need hand? Now, what if it was $100,000? Which means each one of those coins is a $25,000 coin. How many of those coins would be in your let it go hand, into the basket hand? And how many would be in your right hand to buy that new furnace your house needs, to buy the car that just broke down on you, to send your kids to college, to do one of a number of things that are really good things and things you need to do, and wow, you know, $25,000, $50,000 could go a long way to make that happen. Honestly, be honest with yourself. Put your quarters in your left hand and your right hand. What would you do if I actually gave you $100,000 today and said, you choose? Okay, you got your coins in your hands? Take your right hand, put it in your pocket or your purse or whatever. Let go of the coins and take your hand out. Take your left hand and put that in there and just pass those around. Do that to you. Oh, there. Okay. I'll give that to you, Sue. Okay. Now, if you were being honest with yourself, and if you were like most people, odds are what happened is when we started out and I gave you the dollar, they all started in your right hand, and then I said, we're going to give to some noble cause, how many of your quarters would go to your left hand? odds are most of you probably put most of your quarters in your left hand. It's a buck, it's no big deal. We'll put it in the left hand, put it in the basket, no big deal. But if you are like most people, and if you were being honest with yourself, I'm guessing what happened with a lot of you was, as the dollar amount went up that I was giving you, more and more of those coins started slipping back into that right hand. Now, the reason I bring all that up is because there is something about that, that there's a universal truth there that we need to discuss, and it is that I need to disprove a myth this morning. And it's a myth that a lot of us buy into, and it's the myth that if I had a little bit more, then I would be able to give more. If I had a little bit more, then I would be able to share some more. But the truth is, and there have been studies upon studies done upon this, that in reality, the more people have, the more income people have. Generally speaking, the amount of that income they give away to church and to charities and to things like that actually decreases more with the more that they have. And here's the thing. Getting more doesn't dull our desire to have more. And getting more doesn't necessarily make us happy with what we have. See, greed is a very intangible thing. And if you think back to that exercise we just did with the quarters, the hard thing to discern is as quarters were passing back and forth from one hand to the other, at what point does that become greed? Is it when it's at the $1 level and I put a couple quarters in this hand? Is it when it's at the $1,000 level and I go 50-50? Is it at the $100,000 level where I keep some but I give some? At what point does something become greed? How many quarters can you keep before you are being greedy? And to answer that question, we really need to define what greed is all about. We've talked previously, a couple weeks ago, about envy. And envy is specifically me believing that if I could have what you have, I would be happy. We're going to talk in a couple weeks about gluttony. And gluttony is all about indulgence. Gluttony says, if I just simply consume enough, I will be happy. But greed is all about getting more. If I just get a little bit more, I'll be happy. Leo Tolstoy tells a story about a man who was a peasant farmer and was very unsatisfied with his lot in life and generally life in general. And one day someone came along and made him this fantastic offer. He said, "For 1,000 rubles, I will give you all the land that you can walk across in one day." And so the man thought, this is a great deal, I'm going to take it. He said, here's the only conditions. You have to walk the entire distance. And the second condition is, you have to be back to your starting point by sundown. And so the next morning, bright and early, as sun came up, the man got up and he started walking. And he was walking feverishly and jogging a little bit intermittently. And he was going as fast as he could so he could cover as much ground as he could cover. Because every step he got was one more piece of land that he was gaining for himself. And around noon, his pace started to slow down, but he kind of pushed himself onward because he knew, if I can just get a little bit farther and a little bit farther, then I'll have that much more land. And towards the middle of the afternoon, he knew he should start turning back, but he kept, I'll just take one more step, and I'll just take one more step. And finally he says, that's it, that's all I can do. And so he turns around and starts to head for home. And he starts going, and by this time he's been walking all day, and he's getting very tired, and he's slowing down. And as the sun is starting to set in the sky, he can see his starting point, and he just forces himself to get back to that starting point by the time the sun sets. And finally, he makes it just as the sun goes down. He gets back to his starting point, and then collapses in exhaustion. And a story that Tolstoy tells says that he collapses in exhaustion and right there, within a few minutes, dies. And the name of the story is How Much Land Does a Man Need? You see, greed is that thing that drives us and compels us and tells us that if you could just get a little bit more, then you'd be happy. If you could just take that one extra step, just go that one extra yard and gain that extra bit of land, and then you will be happy. If you just get a little bit more, you will be happy. And I think one of the struggles we have with greed is we simply underestimate the sneakiness of it. Greed is a sneaky, sneaky thing. You see, most people would agree that greed is probably a bad thing. Even those who aggressively acquire life's accoutrements will caution you that you don't get too greedy or it will catch up with you. And the problem is that we all have a different perspective on greed. What is greedy and what is not? And we also all have a changing perspective on what is greedy and what is not. Here's what I've come to discover about greed and how greed works. This little block here represents what I have. This block represents what I would like to have, or what I reasonably think I could expect to have or deserve to have. Not the pie-eyed dreams, but this is what I could reasonably expect to have. Greed is aspiring to anything above that level. And that's how most of us look at greed. We have what, this is what we have, this is what we'd reasonably like to have, and greed is anything that goes beyond that amount. Now, what I have and what you have is different. And what I think is reasonable to expect to have and what you think is reasonable to expect to have is different. But here's the biggest thing about it. As I get more, what I think is reasonable to have increases. And as what I think is reasonable to have increases, what I consider to be greedy rises. See, greed is sneaky because perspective on it is always changing. Greed is sneaky because it doesn't matter how much or how little you have. Greed is sneaky because it is rooted in the desire for more. And the desire for more is something that we all almost always have with us. The desire for more is something that we almost all often feel like we're kind of entitled to. See, greed tells us that if we can only get just a little bit more, we'll be happy. Which brings us to the story that was read earlier. A story about a man who had a bumper crop, a farmer who had a huge crop, and the crop was so huge that he couldn't fit it all into his barns. And so he decides to tear down his old barns and build newer, bigger, better ones. And the man says to himself, "You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry." Or in other words, now that you've got more and when you build your barns so that you can hold more, then you are going to be happy. Now, there is nothing wrong with having a bumper crop. You know, just like there's nothing wrong with earning a good wage or even having a boatload of money, provided you come by it by honest means. There's not even anything wrong with wanting certain things, and there's not even anything wrong with getting certain things in life. But the problem in this story is that when the man receives more than he needs, he decides that he needs a little more. Now, I'm pretty comfortable with my conventional understanding of greed. You know, since I decide what is reasonable to desire and what is greed, shockingly, I'm almost never greedy by my own standard. Some of you may be greedy by my standards. I may be greedy by some of your standards. But by my standards, I am right where I need to be. However, I am much less comfortable with a definition of greed that simply boiled down to the belief that getting more will make me happy. Because I often do believe that. I often do have that feeling inside of me. If I could just get a little bit more of that, then I would be happy. I am often lured by the promise of more. More cash in my bank account. More apps on my phone. More books on my shelf. More square feet in my house. More horsepower in my car. More stamps in my passport. More clothes in my closet. More candy in my trick-or-treat bag. And we all live in a world that is constantly bombarding us with the message that all we need to be happy is just a little bit more. Whether it's diamond jewelry or power tools, china plates or aluminum siding, spa treatments or sport event tickets, all we need to be happy, just a little bit more. And judging by the fact that in 2009, 72 million or Canadians held 72 million credit cards, which held $78 billion of debt on them, it would seem that a lot of us are buying in to that idea. But it's not just about cash and currency. Greed sneaks in to all sorts of areas of our life and gets a foothold. If I could only get a little bit more attention from people, if people just noticed me a little bit more, then I'd be happy. If I could just get a little bit more affection from people, from that certain someone, if they would just show me a little bit more affection, then I would be happy. If I could get a little bit more appreciation, I'd be happy. That would be nice. If I got a little bit more admiration, if people would just look up to me a little bit every now and then I could be happy. If I could just get a little bit more acknowledgement of what I do for this family, for this church, for this organization, then if I just got a little bit more of that, then I would be happy. No matter what it is we're looking to or hoping for, that little bit of more, greed, by its very nature, is setting us up to fail. You see, greed is a scam. It's a con. It's nothing but smoke and mirrors. Greed is the carrot in front of the donkey. They used to put a carrot on a stick in front of the donkey, and with every step the donkey took towards the carrot moved one step away from the donkey. And that carrot is whatever it is that greed is telling you, if you get a little bit more of that, you will be happy. And if greed is the carrot, guess what that makes us? Greed prompts us to rest our hopes for happiness on having just a little bit more than we do right now. But that is an unattainable goal. When we trust in greed to bring us happiness, we are simply setting ourselves up for failure. As the writer of Proverbs says, a bird sees a trap being set and knows to stay away. But these people set an ambush for themselves. They are trying to get themselves killed. Such is the fate of all who are greedy for money. It robs them of life. Well, the fifth beatitude sits in stark contrast to the belief that getting more will be the answer to our search for happiness. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus states, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. A mercy has often been narrowly defined as forgiveness. And forgiveness is always an act of mercy, but mercy is not always an act of forgiveness. Mercy is giving what has not been earned or merited. And this broader definition is vital to understand how mercy can be an alternative to greed. Greed is me getting what I think I deserve. Mercy is me giving you what you have not earned. Greed said happiness comes from desiring more, but Jesus says happiness is found in giving to others. In Acts 20, Luke writes, remembering the words of the Lord Jesus himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. You are more happy when you give than you when you receive. According to Jesus, you get more happiness from giving than you do from getting. Particularly giving that is unexpected and unearned and unmerited. Especially giving not just out of excess or surplus, but giving that is sacrificial or might actually cost us something. And most importantly, it is giving that is motivated by what we have already received. In Matthew 18, Jesus tells a parable about three men. The first man owes a truckload of money to the second man, and he can't pay it. He can't even pay a little bit of it. And so he comes before the man and asks him for mercy, and the second man erases the debt, says, you know what, let's just cancel the whole thing, and lets him go. The first man goes to the third man and says, you owe me a couple bucks. And the third man says, I don't got it. I can't pay you. And so the first man beats him and throws him in jail and says, you will stay in jail until you can pay me every last penny of what you owe me. Well, when the second man heard what the first man had done, he called him back in, uncancelled the debt, and threw that man in jail as well. You see, the message of the story is very clear. We show mercy to others because of the mercy God has already shown to us. In Matthew 10, Jesus says, freely you have received, freely give. In Luke 12, he says, from everyone who has given much, much will be demanded. From one who has been entrusted much, much more will be asked. We have been given great mercy by God, and now we pass that mercy on to others. And remember that mercy extends far beyond forgiveness. James writes, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. And that means all the good stuff you have is mercy given to you, and is mercy to be given to others. And here's where my problem lies. See, greed and mercy are not so much opposing forces as they are different ends of a spectrum. And the problem with a spectrum always is that gray area right in the middle. You see, we can easily identify the gratuitously greedy. Came across a story this week that's a perfect example. It says there was a notorious miser who was called on by the chairman of a community charity. Sir, the fundraiser said, our records show that despite your great wealth, you have not given even once to our charity drives. And the tightwad fumed. Do your records show that I have an elderly mother who was left penniless when my father died? Do your records show that I have a disabled brother who is unable to work? Do your records show that I have a widowed sister who has small children who she can barely make ends meet? No, sir, the embarrassed volunteer replied. Our records don't show any of those things. The man said, well, I don't give to any of them, so why should I give to you? We can spot the gratuitously greedy. And we can also spot the magnificently merciful. Those people who give of themselves sacrificially in visible and unmistakable ways. You probably know some of them in your life. You've probably been benefited by some of them, received mercy from some of them in your life. We think of great people like Mother Teresa, who spent her life in the slums of Calcutta. We think of people who give great amounts to help cure disease or take care of orphans or to fight famine or all of these things. We have seen those people who are magnificently mercy. We see the people on the two ends of the spectrum, but it's that area in the middle that causes me trouble. Jeff Cook writes this about that middle ground. Certainly, we need tools and clothing to survive and shelter to survive. Certainly, God's world is good and ought to be enjoyed. In purchasing a new home, typing on a new computer, or sitting down to a well-prepared meal, many of us experience God-given happiness. The world around us ought to be seen as a means to our bliss. But how do I justify buying a bigger house to store all of my stuff in when there are people living in cardboard boxes and sleeping on park benches? How do we splurge on a fancy meal in an expensive restaurant when there are 25,000 people who die every day from hunger or hunger-related causes? How do I fork out $3, $4, $5 for a coffee from Starbucks or Tim's when 1.1 billion people do not have access to clean drinking water? How do I get a big screen TV or take a Disney vacation when 1.1 billion children live in poverty? I don't know. And I don't know how to draw that line. I don't know where in that gray area the line is supposed to be. But one of the most helpful passages to me comes out of Mark chapter 12. Jesus sat down on the opposite side of the place where the offerings were being put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins, worth only a fraction of a penny. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put in more to the treasury than all the others. They gave out of their wealth, but she gave out of her poverty. She put in everything, all that she had to live on." You see, it's not based on dollar figures or percentages or statistics. It's all about what is in your heart. In the end, mercy places my trust in God to continue to provide for me as He's always done, while greed trusts in my ability to continue to acquire more. And perhaps, in this case, it's more important that we ask the question than come up with a one-size-fits-all answer. Perhaps if we continue to ask, where is my heart at, and what is my trust in? Perhaps if we continue to ask, am I being led by my desire to acquire? Perhaps if we continue to ask, is receiving this for myself more important than giving that to someone else? Perhaps if we continue to ask, which hand am I holding all my quarters in? Perhaps then we will be on the right track. You stand on the front lines. The battle is on. One side says happiness comes from getting just a little bit more. The other side says happiness comes from giving to others. Which side will you choose? Ha ha ha.